from meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news. Broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the show. We all know Diane Diamond as a broadcasting pioneer. We're going to say that, Diane. Hopefully you won't get mad at me. An investigative reporter and author, and we always like to have her come on the show to talk about current events and things in the news. How are you, ma'am?
I'm pretty good, for as old as a pioneer as I am.
I thought that might get me into some trouble. But
no, I'm pleased. Thank you.
You know what? You've been around a long time, and all you have to do is turn on the news, and you see a different face there every night. And the recognizable ones are starting to disappear. Why is that?
Well, I think a lot of it is economics.
Yeah.
But frankly, you know, for those of us who've been in TV here in America for a long, long time, we start to earn more money than the kids coming out of college. It'll do anything for X numbers of dollars a year. You know, it's the old adage, you get what you pay for. I don't mean to speak ill of the young, smart, dynamic kids that are coming out of school, but, you know, it's not really good journalism unless it's done by an experienced person who isn't snowed, who isn't scared, who knows the questions to ask. And I do, you've touched on a very interesting topic for me. I worry about the state of journalism, frankly.
You know, no kidding. And this isn't at all what we were going to talk about, but I just,
no.
I think a good interviewer picks up a topic, brings it to his guests, and they run with it for a bit. So let's run with this for a minute or two.
You know, I'll tell you, honestly, I started in Albuquerque, New Mexico. When I was in high school, I answered the phones at the local TV station because my girlfriend's father owned it, and I just got a summer job. And I learned it from the ground up. I am not highly educated, but I am street smart, and I've done it for a long, long time. And I worry because those local jobs are not available anymore. Not everybody has a newsroom. Radio stations, I worked in radio for a long, long time. KOB, the big 50,000-watt station in Albuquerque. They don't have newsroom personnel like we used to have, and so then those that come into TV don't have that experience covering things from a radio perspective or a newspaper perspective. They just get a TV job, and we all assume that they're really smart and know exactly what they're talking about.
And there's
not
a big,
always the case.
there's a big difference between reading the news and reporting the news, though.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my sons is actually in there at Murrow School in Washington State right now in his second year.
Oh, good school.
And he wants to go get into this business. And I said to him, are you sure? Because you're a shy kid. You're one that has never been able to come forward and speak your mind. And he said, how do you know I'm shy? And I see his marks in the first couple of years, and I've seen some of the work that he's done, and he's shocked the hell out of me, and I'm his father.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. It's funny. We send them away to blossom, and by golly, they blossom.
That's a good thing. Anyway, speaking of Washington State and some other states, it looks like even if you're in the country illegally, you'll be able to get an ID card, driver's license, be able to do what you want to do. You write an article at DianeDiamond.net and some of the newspapers that print your articles that you're getting a little bit of flack about, called Show Your Papers, But What Papers? About a national ID card. Let's talk about that a bit.
Yeah, now let me ask you this. In Canada, is there a national ID card?
No. We have something, I know in the States, the Social Security card, we have what's called a social insurance card. Same thing. It really is nothing. It's an assigned number to you for tax purposes. And otherwise, no, there isn't anything.
Yeah. What I'm talking about stems from the recent developments in the state of Arizona.
Right.
Arizona here has responded to the fact that the federal government has not passed any immigration laws. You know what? I'm going to change telephones here. Sorry, I
That's
have
okay.
one that was just about to die. they're so many states are frustrated that the federal government's done nothing to stem the tide of illegal aliens coming into this country. So Arizona's passed laws that allow officers to stop people on the street, not because they're, you know, suspected of robbing a bank or anything, but just they look suspect and show me your papers. Right. Show me that you're in this country legally. Well, what papers? I don't walk around with papers. And I was born in Burbank, California. I am an American citizen, but I don't carry papers around. So I think it's time in America, unless we want a hodgepodge of different state laws, to just get a national ID card. Now, there's a lot of liberals out there, and I'm neither liberal or conservative. I'm an independent, but the liberals scream, oh, my God, it's going to just mess up my privacy, and the government's going to know all about me. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I mean, they already have your social. Yeah. There are cameras at every corner. You're on the Internet talking about the details of your life, so anybody can know all about you. This is just an ID card to show the police if you are stopped, to show at the voting polls. Mm-hmm. When you go to vote, so we could stem the tide of voter fraud. It is a something that you could use for Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, instead of all these disparate processes that we have. Let's stop spending all that money. Let's just spend money on everybody getting an ID card. Boom, that's it. And it's yours and yours alone, because it's got, oh, the scan of your iris or your fingerprint and your photo on it. So if you lose it, it's no good to anybody else.
I think
the time's come.
Diane Diamond's here. And I agree with you. The UK, Germany, Australia have national ID cards. What about those that will say, well, how about a passport? Well, you can be in the country and not have a passport.
Well, that's true. But if you're in this country and you want to get a job, right now you have to go through this E-Verify system.
Right.
So what is that? It, simply put, the person who, let's just say for the sake of this argument, crossed illegally from Mexico. They come to Colorado. They want a job. All right, I have to put your information into E-Verify. What's your social? The person gives a fake social. But it's a real one, so it checks out.
Right.
They give a fake address. They give the E-Verify system that we have now sucks, if I could use the Latin term. It just is terrible. It relies on what is easily false information. Passports already, 75 million passports already have this biometric fingerprint on them, your iris, your photo, your fingerprint. And, you know, I haven't heard that the world has ended because of that.
No.
So I don't know. There are lots of arguments against it. But I could slap every one of them down saying it's so simple, it would be cost-effective, it would solve a plethora of problems, and I don't see how it will compromise my privacy if my iris scan is on a little card in my wallet.
No, exactly. Diane Diamond's here. When we talk about immigration, illegal immigration, or doing it the proper way, November right around the corner, Diane, the politicians are swiping at each other right now, literally. How big of an issue will this be come November?
You know, it's funny. I noticed that the Democrats say there's no voter fraud problem.
Yeah.
Because, as the argument goes, they want whoever can get to the polls, the illegals, whatever, to go and vote Democratic. They're not going to vote Republican. The Republicans, I think, overblow the problem. How big is it? We don't know. I mean, that's like proving how many people have told a lie today. So I know it's a problem. We know it's a problem from past elections that we've had, especially up in the president's territory in Chicagoland. You know, so why not fix it? It's the voter fraud problem has been treated like the immigration problem. Well, we don't really know how big it is, and it's kind of hard to solve, so we'll just ignore it. Makes me mad.
Speaking of Chicagoland, what's going on there? Like, this is nuts.
Oh, are you talking about the Jackson kid?
I'm talking about everything. I'm talking about murders. I'm talking about everything.
That
it's just gone crazy.
It has. It has. It is a lawless community there, I think. And, you know, it's odd because it's not the trend in America. The trend is that violent crime is going down and has been for several years. So, you know, I would say off the top of my head, the core of it is drugs.
Yeah.
Drugs and violence and single-parent families where kids are running amok and guns are readily available. It's a terrible situation. And again, I'm not smart enough to figure it out, but that's why we have these leaders, these lawmakers we elect. Where are they?
What about reporting the Chicago situation? You have a city government and a state government and a federal government that I'm not going to say they're going to try and sugarcoat it because it's impossible with the way things are going, but how do you report a high murder rate? How do you get into the streets of the south side of Chicago, Diane, and tell the real story as far as what's going on? It's just so dangerous.
It is dangerous, and it sort of reminds me of Palomine went to Mexico, was the bureau chief for the New York Times down there, and finally got pulled out because the drug cartel killings, assassinations, kidnappings were just so dire. So you notice we don't hear much about that anymore.
No.
And I'm afraid that, look, there are lots of really good reporters in Chicago, but there are also news directors and editors that say, I'm not sending you in there.
Yeah.
So then nobody gets the benefit of good information and good reporting. It's a conundrum, and I don't know. I'm feeling very stupid for you tonight. I don't have any solutions to any of these problems.
No. It's just fun to have the discussion. Diane Diamond's here. Her website, dianediamond.net. Let's get into Jerry Sandusky here a little bit. News reports coming out today. More potential victims coming forward. He has a life sentence. He's never going to get out. What about the case? Where do you think it's going to turn next? And what about these new victims, Diane? Can justice be served for them?
Well, that's a really good question. I've just filed a piece on the dailybeast.com. Newsweek and the Daily Beast sent me to cover the whole Sandusky trial. And, you know, it doesn't come as any surprise that there are more victims coming out,
yeah,
or alleged victims. But these men reportedly come from a time that they say they were molested in the 70s and 80s, when Jerry Sandusky would have been just 20, in his 20s. So, you know, it answers the question. His defense attorney at trial, I think it was in the closing, said to the jury, so, you know, come on, you people, do you think somebody just turns into a pedophile when he's 55 years old?
Yeah.
Well, of course you don't turn into a pedophile at 55 years old. And now we have three others who say that they were molested. If it's true, they are brave souls to come forward,
sure,
because
yep,
a lot of victims never reveal, especially men,
yep,
male victims, just never reveal. It's too traumatic, too embarrassing. But the mental health experts that I interviewed for this Daily Beast article said, oh, you know what? There could be scores out there. There could be dozens and dozens and dozens, because he had this Second Mile charity for disadvantaged kids since 1977. He was on the campus playing football in the mid-60s, joined the staff in the late 60s. So he had so much opportunity that really nobody's surprised. But here's the rub, Dana. In Pennsylvania is a commonwealth. It's not a state, it's a commonwealth. So they have these old archaic laws. And one of the laws is you may not, let's see, to put it simply, anybody over 30 cannot go back and claim childhood sexual abuse in a civil suit and get any compensation.
Right.
So these men who have allegedly come forward, they would be in their 40s now. Well, why are they coming forward? Are they trying to clear the air? Do they feel stronger now that he's been convicted? Do they feel validated by the witnesses who did take the stand, or are they in it for the Penn State money pot?
Yeah, that's hard to say, and that takes me to my next question. The retired FBI director, the inquiry, what came out, none of us should be shocked at, that it was covered up to try and protect the reputation. How about that reputation, and how about all these potential new victims coming forward. Is this something that Penn State will ever be able to recover from?
No, I don't think so. I think it will, you know, if a university ever had a tombstone, it would be on their tombstone.
Yeah.
You know, the location of the Sandusky trial, or Sandusky scandal. I think the NCAA, which regulates football, has made it clear that they may put a bullet in the head of the football program.
Hmm.
They may just cancel it altogether. They've only done that one other time, way back in the 80s, with a Southern school. So that football program, which brings in $53 million in profit every year, could be gone. So that's going to affect not only the university, but the local community there. It's a very thriving, I don't want to say wealthy, but very well-off community there. You take $53 million out of it, people are going to suffer. So that's not going to bode well for the university. And, you know, the civil suits are going to be legion. They're going to be historic. They're going to be enormous. And why? What? It's been a month now since the verdict. On verdict night, we're standing outside the courthouse. We came out of the courtroom. We heard the crowd roar outside their approval for all the guilty verdicts. And the Penn State PR department made it a point to say, oh, we're going to, right away, we're going to get a process up and a program, and we're going to sit down with the victims, and we're going to compensate them. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, it's a month later, and they haven't done a thing.
No, no.
Not one of the lawyers for these victims reports that they've heard word one from Penn State. I think they're all in a knot about what to do next.
Yeah, a knot is one word for it. They're probably scared and hiding under their desks. Diane Diamond is here. We're talking Penn State. Let's turn the page a little bit to George Zimmerman. My daily commentary tomorrow deals with a case in Florida, an internet cafe, where a fella ends up shooting a couple of suspects, is not being charged, the whole Florida law, so to speak. We're hearing from detectives now, or we're hearing reports that some detectives are saying they were forced into filing the charges. The detective themselves don't file the charge. It's the DA. But what about Zimmerman? Where do you think this is going to go, Diane?
Oh, you know, I covered the Casey Anthony trial down there in Florida, and it was so... The dire umbrella over all of it was the public reaction, yeah. The vast media coverage, driving the bus, so to speak. You know, in the state of Florida, they have this sunshine law, which really, bottom line, is whatever the government knows, the public gets to know. And, you know, look, I'm a veteran. I'm all for freedom of speech, open government, give me the documents I need to tell the story right. But in some instances, because Florida law enforcement must give up everything it knows when it knows it, even if it changes later, it really, in my opinion, taints the process and can negatively affect the defendant. Now, having said that, Casey Anthony got off scot-free.
Yeah, did she ever.
You know, I mean, she had a little probation for writing bad checks. But, you know, so maybe all in all the process works. But I do think that the state of Florida mucks it up for themselves with the amount of information they are forced to give up early on in each case. And, I mean, You go to cocktail parties, you have coffee with your friends. I'm sure everyone you talk to already has an opinion about whether or not George Zimmerman is guilty or not.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
You know, was he attacked by this boy, or did he attack this boy?
Yeah.
Was it murder? Was it defending himself? And that's not the way the justice system's supposed to work.
No, and it gets to the jury system itself, too. When I interviewed Jeff Ashton and I asked him that question as far as the jury system goes, he gave a response that didn't surprise me. I'm not going to say what that response is right now because I want to ask you.
I'd be interested.
What Florida does, and let's think of Drew Peterson in Illinois and these other cases that will be coming up here sooner than we think. What about the jury system? We keep talking about revamping it. Those 12 people that have to sit there and make that decision. Is it really fair? Is there going to be a fair jury in the Zimmerman case?
Well, you know, I'm always astounded at, okay, put the Casey Anthony trial aside.
Yeah.
I'm always astounded at how deliberative they usually are and how seriously jurors take their duty. You know, I watched these people in the Jerry Sandusky case very closely. It was a quick trial. It was only two weeks, just 7 or 8 days of testimony over 2 weeks. And they studied each of the 48 charges, and they didn't find them guilty of everything. So you know they were back there arguing about a few things. So I think we do have a really good jury system, but I think things need to be clarified. And if I could pick one thing, I think judges need to do a better job when they give the jury the instructions. Okay, you've heard the case. Now you're going to go back and deliberate. Here are my instructions. I think they could do better at helping them figure out where the heck do we start. Okay, we elect a foreman, but then what do? Do we take a vote right away? How do we do this? So I think there could be better instructions, especially about what is reasonable doubt.
Yeah.
Because so many jurors tell me later that they got all confused. It was too much information, and they couldn't sort it all out, and so that means I have reasonable doubt, right? Well, no, that's not what that means. That just means you're temporarily confused.
Yeah.
So I think the bottom line is we got a pretty darn good system, but sometimes I look at some of the over-coverage and the sensational coverage. You know, these TV ladies flaring their nostrils and declaring everybody guilty, guilty before there's even a trial. Again, that's not the way the system is supposed to work, and I sometimes look at Canada's system, where isn't it that you may not report on an ongoing case?
Well, it depends. There is an option for a publication ban, but we're even starting to turn more towards the sensationalism now with the media. The media is saying, well, if the Americans can do it, why can't we do it?
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be interesting. We've got about 2 minutes left, Diane, and I'm going to finish up with this. You're probably one of the busiest people that I know. You don't get to put your feet up too much. What's next for you?
I'm going to Chicago, as a matter of fact.
Oh, good Lord. Would you like my bulletproof vest?
I guess I better.
Yeah.
I'm actually going with a group of girlfriends. Mm-hmm. We go to someplace every year. And so Chicago. We're supposed to go to Graceland. I don't know what happened. We're going to Chicago anyway.
Yeah.
But after that, I'll tell you, I'm looking at a case out of San Francisco. A very prominent gay rights activist who has been accused but not charged yet with many, many, many counts of very lurid child pornography, and he has an adopted young son in the house. He's out on bail, and the child is still in the house, and I don't know, it just sort of stinks to high heaven to me.
Yeah.
I want to look at that closely.
It's going to be interesting, and I'm sure you'll do a great job covering it. Diane Diamond, always a pleasure, ma'am. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. That's Diane Diamond. Do we need Canada, the United States, does North America need a national identification card? Some say yes, some say no. With the current Obama administration, like Red mentions, it's never going to happen. You miss out on all those illegal alien votes. Did I say that? Yeah, absolutely I did. Well, we're going to take a break for a couple of minutes. We're going to come back with criminal profiler Pat Brown and continue our discussion on Zimmerman and Sandusky and see what else Pat has been up to. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. Okay, we are back. I just want to share a little something with you. Last time we were on talking about the crazy gay porn wannabe alleged murderer Luca Magnotta. Now starting to see press stories that an envelope addressed to Luca Magnotta, which was later found to contain a suspicious powder, prompted authorities today to shut down one of Canada's biggest postal centers. So it looks like the nutcases are even starting to send mail to Luca. Luca sent body parts in the mail to the government, and now the crazy folks are starting to send white powder to him. Looks like white powder was nothing, and scared some postal employees, but I don't know. When it goes around, it comes around for sure. Okay, we'll be right back with Pat Brown. Hey, we're back. Criminal profiler Pat Brown is here. Of course, she's the author of books like The Profiler, My Life Hunting Serial Killers and Psychopaths, and Killing for Sport, Inside the Minds of Serial Killers. Pat, welcome back to the show.
Hey, how you doing tonight?
I'm good. Last time you were on, we were talking about the loony Luca Magnotta gay porn wannabe. I don't know if you saw the news, but one of the biggest postal outlets here in Canada was getting some mail for Mr. Magnotta that contained white powder. So the story never ends.
Yeah, well, you know, this is a guy that needs to go away and never be seen again.
Yep.
But unfortunately, we'll probably hear from him over the next 20 or 30 or 40 years because there's no death penalty. So,
well, someone that isn't going to be getting out of jail anytime soon, but we're hearing press reports now of more potential victims coming forward. Jerry Sandusky, what about that? What about these victims? Can they truly get justice? Is there the possibility that they're looking for maybe a payout from Penn State? Or nobody should be surprised with these stories coming forward now.
Yeah, I'd say no to the first and yes to the second. No, they can't. It's really hard to get justice years later. I mean, from how can you prove anything? I mean, yes, you can say, well, he's done it before, and he did it to me, but that's not proof. That's just your allegations years later. So it's pretty hard in the sense of the criminal justice system that you have any proof. As far as being able to claim that he did that and get a payoff, that's possible. And then the question is, you know, is that person telling the truth or aren't they? And the sad part about it is, if you are telling the truth, people may not believe you. And if you aren't telling the truth, people may believe you. So,
yeah.
You know, there's just no way to know unless you've got some kind of something to back it up. And I think we're going to see, you know, people come out because, yes, he may have done something more to more people, and some people might just want money. Who knows?
Yeah, it's hard to say. The PR spin is going for Penn State, the retired FBI director. They come forward, and I know you'll be shocked at this, Pat, that they're saying that it was actually a cover-up to try and protect their reputation. I'm saying that facetiously, obviously. What about that? Is this something that Penn State can ever recover from?
Well, they're certainly going to suffer for a long time from it. And I think it's kind of a little bit, in my personal opinion, a little bit blown out of the water. And I know a lot of people are going to like to hear that, because whenever we talk about children being abused, we always want to have everybody react in the maximum way possible, you know, because it's a child, you know. And if there's any suspicion, you have to do everything possible. But there's a good truth to that. But then the question is, when you're talking about a large, large organization, and people who've known each other for years, and allegations which, you know, are not absolute. And these allegations weren't actually absolute allegations of sex assault. They were allegations of, well, not so great behavior. And, you know, now I'm sure, looking back, maybe they should have taken a much, much stronger stance, like, hey, you know, this is simply unacceptable for a grown man to be in the shower with a young boy, naked. That should just be unacceptable. But, you know, for years, you know, there's a lot of guys who take showers together and play around in the shower and hit each other with towels. And, I mean, women don't do this kind of stuff. I mean, we don't, you know, girls don't like this kind of thing. We don't shower with anybody.
No.
But guys, I mean, a lot of them will say, yeah, we just go in the group shower, and that's the way we do things. And people play around and fool around and do, you know, just stuff, but it isn't necessarily sexual stuff. And so I think the problem is, since that is part of sort of behaviors, then the question is, when this is brought to you that, hey, you know, we got Sandusky in there and he's wrestling with some kid in the shower, the question is, okay, was he just being a boyish fellow acting stupid, or was he really sexually assaulting the boy? And we do not know that, so I can see the internal discussion of what do? Do we, you know, take this guy that we know, that we don't believe he would do such a thing, really, because he's our friend, and what do we do about this?
Yeah.
Or do we just, you know, try to deal with it and we think it didn't really happen? They get very confused. So I think that, looking back on it, it seems easy to say, oh, God, they should have known better.
Sure. Yeah.
This guy's a sexual abuser. But that is not what they knew back in 1998, because there were no charges filed. Just the fact that he hugged a boy in the shower. I don't like it, but, you know, is that proof that he sexually assaulted a child? No. And I think back then, that's the problem. They didn't have the absolute proof, and they knew this guy for too long, and they were confused, and I don't think they took necessarily the right and best actions, but I think it's a little overblown, and, you know, it's because it's hindsight.
Well,
we know now.
The guilty party is not going to get out of jail anytime soon, that's for sure.
Well, he's certainly getting his due. I mean, there's no, you know, Sandusky, in my opinion, you know, I mean, everything I've seen, he's guilty as hell.
Yeah, absolutely.
But what he did to each one of the children, when he did it, what people actually knew is another whole issue. And, you know, Sandusky deserves what he's getting. Certainly Penn State needs to look, you know, now at policies and say, what very strong lines do we need to have that if any adult male crosses, or a female, crosses a line which can be suggestive in behavior, it's simply not acceptable ways for us to behave, period. You know, just like, you know, we have in many organizations where, for example, the man does not, you know, go alone into a room with a female.
Right.
You know, like the doctor, you know, his patient, if it's a male doctor and a female patient, just because.
Yeah.
So you take the nurse in. And that's not because the doctor's assaulting every woman in there, but it's because, you know, it can be he said, she said, we don't want to go there.
Sure. Yep,
no. But that's a good rule. Yep. And obviously Penn State needed better rules, and they didn't have them, and they obviously better get them now. But I think it's really hard. You know, yes, I don't think maybe they could have been stronger against, you know, Sandusky. But it was reported to the police the first time. Nothing happened.
Yep.
There were no charges. Second time, I'm sorry, but McCreary's story was a little on the weak side, so I understand where they, you know, McCreary didn't report it right to the police. You know, how do you deal with it?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm not in their shoes then. You know, I don't know.
Well, there's lots of people that should be looking in the mirror. There's a case that actually just broke today. In Florida, we're going to change topics here a little bit. In an internet cafe, a couple of perpetrators were shot by a customer. No charges are going to be laid. Now there's parallels to the Zimmerman case. What about this? When we talk, you and I have talked many times about jury systems. Is there a jury out there that can give George Zimmerman a fair trial?
I don't think there's a jury out there that can give anybody a fair trial. I mean, because I don't think a fair trial exists in the American justice system anymore.
Yeah.
Because we're game players. We have lawyers in there trying to, you know, they're not seeking justice. They're not seeking truth. They're playing every dirty trick in the book on both sides, and in front of a bunch of people who they got off a bus stop.
Yeah.
Who have absolutely zero education, zero knowledge, and have no way to be able to make these kind of judgments. And I'm not saying anything I'm not in a way, a nasty way against the jurors, each one of them. They're doing their best. But, you know, I don't know much about rocket science. And if you grab me tomorrow to make me have to make a decision on whether that rocket should fly into space or not, yeah, good luck.
Yeah.
You know, you can put all the scientists you want in front of me. I do not know what I'm talking about. I do not know what they're saying. And I'll try to learn it in 1 week. But it's pretty stupid. You know, they've gone and gotten themselves a PhD. They got doctors before their names, and I never got past biology in high school. And I'm going to sit there and try to figure out what these PhD doctors of 20 years experience in aeronautics are saying. Is that stupid or what?
No, it's not stupid. And it's, I knew.
That's what we have for a jury system.
I knew you.
I wanted to get it through our head.
I knew you would answer this way because we've had this discussion before. And I always love hearing your answers, but whether it's Zimmerman or Drew Peterson or whatever case that's going to be coming up here in the next little while, or whatever one when we turn on our televisions tomorrow, the new one that will pop up, what can we do to make it different?
Well, of course, my answer to that is always we need sort of a professional jury system that has people who are well qualified and trained, and then come out of that pool to do the determinations, make the be the jury. But if we're not doing that, one of the things we really need to get down to, I think we need to stop all the shenanigans that go on in the court system. We need to stop allowing a pack of liars to go in there and do the stuff that we saw in the Casey Anthony case.
Right.
There has to be some decorum in court, which seems to be non-existent. We need to get to the point where I personally think this needs to get out of the media. We need to get the facts in the courtroom. I would like to see cameras out of the courtroom. I don't think it should be an entertainment show. And we need to, you know, stop all this stuff that's being dumped before they get to the court, like, you know, this stuff about Zimmerman, you know, and his little cousin, you know.
Right.
It's like, what a bunch of crap is this? You're trying to obviously taint the jury, trying to change the public opinion, and they're doing it on both sides. And this is disgusting. I mean, this is, you know, some of us is really neither here nor there, and we should be looking at the facts of the case in a courtroom, you know, determining what proves whether Zimmerman, you know, committed a justifiable homicide or he didn't commit a justifiable homicide. It should be the facts, and we're lucky if the jury ever gets to those facts, and if we don't see 90% of the stuff going on in court just being a sideshow and a circus.
We talk about justice being served, and it's served many different ways. You and I both know that. How the accused should not be able to profit from what they've gone through, Casey Anthony, etc. But what about the lawyers, Pat? The Jose Baez's of the world that write their books to try and make a buck or two. Is that just free enterprise, or has that gone too far, too?
Well, I don't know that we can stop it, because, yes, that is free enterprise. I do think, however, the court system could have a gag order. Certainly, I've seen, for example, up in Canada, generally speaking, they're much better about having a gag order on the cases and not allowing, you know, a free-for-all out there. And I think without that, you can't pump up the zooiness around the case to the level where it becomes such a big deal that everybody wants to read the next book that comes out. If Casey Anthony's case had not, you know, if we had not seen any of those jailhouse, you know, videos, if we hadn't all seen the case out in the media, if that had just been a quiet case done in a Florida courtroom, and then we got the decision, you know, I just don't think we'd see the near amount of money out there for people to make, you know, a fortune off of.
Right.
But where the way the stakes are raised, yeah, then free enterprise, you know, they're going to take advantage of it any way they can.
I don't know if you caught Robert Blake is back in the media. His interview with Piers Morgan the other day. He's now trying to pimp a book himself. And these acquitted murderers, O.J., Robert Blake, we could go on and on with them. Again, being able to, same question, come forward and try to profit off the death of someone else. Is that different?
Well, I don't know what's different about it. I mean, the problem is that, you know, Robert Blake has a name. Robert Blake had an interesting incident in his life.
Yeah.
Robert Blake gets to go on Piers Morgan. Robert Blake is a publisher. That's reality.
Yeah.
And I think what we're really missing is that we need to go back to square one and work on our justice system, which is just a sham, an absolute sham. And every time I hear people stand up and go, "We've got the best justice system in the world," I think, where the hell have you been living? Compared to what? Yeah. You know, I'm not sure I see what it is, because it isn't really about doing the right thing and having a person have an appropriate, decent, you know, chance to defend themselves against, you know, being railroaded. And, you know, people also don't realize that while you have people getting off on crimes that they clearly committed because of our jury system, we also have people being put into prison.
Yep.
With just egregiously bad defenses and absolutely no evidence, simply because the jury doesn't like the guy.
Yep.
and that's just as awful. So, you know, we need to do something about that. But, you know, lawyers make so much damn money on the system. You know, they know how to play this so well that they can make, you know, oodles of money and, you know, carry it on and on and on, that I don't see it changing anytime soon unless we get some real reform. And who's going to be behind the reform? Lawyers?
I don't think I've ever asked you a political question, but I'm going to. There's an election coming around the corner here in November. Is this, any of this, what we talk about, going to be any part of any campaign, or is it just same old, same old?
You mean our judicial system?
I'm talking justice system. I'm talking crime and punishment. I'm talking everything, the whole kit and caboodle.
I don't think so.
No, I agree.
I really don't think so. I don't think that's going to be an issue at all, because for most people, it's not an issue till they're involved in it.
Yep.
You know, they're having a good time watching television and buying the books and talking about it and making their comments on the internet. But they're not too concerned about it until their loved one ends up getting murdered, or they end up getting charged with a crime they didn't commit. Yep. Up until that point, who cares?
Yeah.
So I think people care about, well, you know, whether they're going to be able to get a job, whether they can ever pay that mortgage on their house, you know. That's what they're concerned about. And of course, the health care issue is, you know, people living longer and longer and longer and having no way to support themselves and no way for anybody else to support them either. I think those are the bigger questions. So I think the justice system is going to get kicked to the curb.
Yep.
And no, we won't hear anything about it. I don't think that's going to be a big deal in this election at all.
I couldn't agree more. I absolutely agree. So what's up with Pat? What are you doing next?
What am I doing next? Well, I have a book coming out on August 15th. I'll be on the Today Show on the 16th. Okay. That book's called How to Save Your Daughter's Life. And it's already good, stirring up some controversy. That's what my books usually do.
Yeah.
Because I'm trying to open the eyes of people and say, hey, look, this is what's out there. This is what your daughter might get involved in. I'm not saying necessarily your daughter's going to get involved in each and every one of these things, yeah. And I'm not saying your daughter's an idiot. But, hey, you're talking about teenagers.
Yeah.
And if we all look back to our teenage years, you know, some of us say, God, how are we still alive?
Oh,
we
boy.
Did some stupid stuff. And I'm trying to get parents to get their heads out of the sand, see what's out there for the safety of their girls, with everything to do from serial killers and rapists to date rape to the internet and people in their own homes that can do the girls harm, and girls getting off into things like prostitution and not knowing, you know, what they're getting into. So it's I'm not trying to put women in burkas like a couple people said to me. I was like, my God, you know, you're trying to keep the girls up in the attic so they don't get hurt. I'm like, yeah. No, I'm just trying to open your eyes, and then you will decide for your family and for your daughter what steps to take, you know, to provide the best, you know, the safest life you can for her without locking her in the attic. So I think it's going to help a lot of parents. I think a lot of parents really don't know some of the things that are in this book. They really just don't know it. And so I think it's going to help a lot of them, parents with their teenagers.
Absolutely. I know what we'll be. I know what you and I will be talking about next time I have you on the show, for sure.
There we go.
When does the book come
not
out?
Like a plan.
When does the book come out again, Pat?
Oh, it's coming out, as far as I know, August 15th.
August 15th. And the name?
Correct. How to Save Your Daughter's Life.
How to Save Your Daughter's Life. And controversial or not, Pat Brown always tells it like it is. My pleasure to have you on the program as usual, ma'am.
Thanks a lot.
Take care.
You
bye-bye.
Too.
That's Pat Brown. She doesn't mince words. Pick up her book, that's for sure. And you know, when you look at this, And it may seem like a dopey question for me about politicians, whether you're in Canada or whether you're in the United States. Do they care about justice issues? Well, they try. I know up here the Conservative government does try. They have an omnibus bill to try and toughen things up, more accountability. But in the States, I think you know, the economy and health care are the main topics. But the jails are full. They're full with 95% of the people that should be there. Maybe 5% or less than 5% that shouldn't be there. It's hard to say. But the jury system, is it broken? Yeah, it could be. We'll see with more cases. You hear the Pat Browns that say it's absolutely broken. You'll hear others, pundits on this program, like defense lawyers and DAs and prosecutors saying it's a pretty good system. We should keep the cameras in the courtroom. Cameras aside, it's justice that's important. It's justice for the victims and the victims' families. It's not how much money a dopey defense lawyer can make on a book when he gets his client off, or how much money a prosecutor can make on a book when he convicts someone. It's about justice, and I think that's what a lot of people forget. Anyway, we're going to end up the show just a few minutes early tonight. My name's Dana Pretzer. I hope you enjoyed the program. You can find more like it at www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. Good night. We'll see you again real soon.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.